Surprises in store for you. We now have two 101 cases where the Supreme Court has issued CVSGs, and so we very likely may see some additional Supreme Court case law in this area in the coming years. But don't get your hopes up under Vanda, because for what the in 101 has become a very common thing happening now. What the courts giveth, the courts taketh away. And so, last month, in Athena Diagnostics versus Mayo Collaborative, you had another diagnostic treatment patent that was held to be invalid under 101. And if you can find ways to square this circle, I would really appreciate hearing from you. Law professors are not known necessarily for their own ability to or being held accountable to the standards of logic and the requirements of the facts of the real world. But I myself even have found it difficult to make sense of the split case decisions here. There does seem to be some emphasis on some particularly uses of words for those of you who do patent prosecution. Vanda used the phrase diagnostic treatment or diagnosis, and in Athena and Mayo they used phrases like observing or diagnosing. And so if you think that there's some huge significant differences in the meaning between treating, diagnosing, and observing when you're talking about diagnostic method treatment patents, then I would be interested to hear that. But apparently, at least at this point in the law, there's starting to be some distinctions there between this, which is why I put up there the somewhat famous statement from the Alice in Wonderland book, right? Why sometimes I believe as many as six impossible things before breakfast. And this is what we are now still at in the 101 area. There, 4 years going on now from the Alice decision, the last decision by the U.S. Supreme Court, in which the Supreme Court never found any of the challenged patented inventions to be valid, we still don't have any real certainty or understanding here. In fact, this is why, for those of you who have been following the policy debates, you'll know that there's actually been a significant push underway at this moment for the Congress to step in and to take action in this regard and amend 101. And in fact, there's currently a working group that's been established by some of the senators, where they're bringing all the stakeholders in the innovation economy together from the high tech space and from the biopharmaceutical space and some public interest groups as well, to talk about these issues, to try to get some agreement on what might be some language that they can put together in a bill. And so don't be surprised if there's not a bill if you don't see a bill that's introduced a little later this year. But Congress is not the focus of my talk today. It's the year in review at the Supreme Court and the Federal Circuit, so I'm going to continue to remain focused on these issues. And so, as I said, there's been a lot of other cases in the 101 area. I could spend more than 45 minutes talking about them, but I won't, because I want to move on to some of the other significant cases, decisions that we've had from the U.S. Supreme Court in particular with respect to the PTAB. Now, of course, the PTAB has raised a lot of questions, constitutional questions, administrative law questions, statutory interpretation questions. The biggest case from the Supreme Court last year is Oil States versus Greens Energy, which involved a constitutional challenge to the PTAB as an entire entity, that it was unconstitutional under the separation of powers doctrine by denying patent owners who have a vested property right interest in their patent that has been issued by the Patent Office their right to a jury trial under the Seventh Amendment. In a split 6-3 decision, with Justice Thomas writing the majority opinion and with a concurrence by Justice Breyer and a dissent from Justice Gorsuch, the Supreme Court held that patents are public rights for purposes of validity determinations under the Patent Act. And this, therefore, invokes this very fundamental distinction between public rights versus private rights that has a long-standing distinction in Anglo-American law. It reaches, in fact, all the way back to the Roman law. It's a distinction essentially between kind of core rights. Private rights are core rights of like life, liberty, property, contract, rights to bodily integrity, rights that would be protected to you under private law doctrines and tort and contract and property. These are rights that are protected under the Due Process Clause of the Constitution and receive full constitutional protections. Public rights is a term of art for essentially special privileges that have been granted by the government. Of course, the classic adage applies, what the government giveth, the government can take it away. When they grant you special privileges, like Social Security benefits or other types of special benefits. And so you have no kind of foundational constitutional rights to those types of claims. You know, bridge monopolies have been deemed to be public rights. Utility monopolies are public rights. Now, it's always been true at the application stage that the terms for applying for a patent and receiving a patent through the patent prosecution process, that is a public rights process, right? Because you are appearing before an agency is making particular determinations, and you are receiving something from the government at that point. But at the point at which a patent issues, historically, and under 19th century case law, patents then were deemed to be vested property rights. And in fact, there was case law from the 19th century that it said that as vested property rights, they cannot be revoked by the patent office itself. Case law from the 19th century actually comparing patents and inventions to patent grants in land. I don't know if any of you know this, but all property rights, including property rights in land, start with an initial determination, an initial grant by a government saying you received this property right. And it does so through a legal mechanism globally known as a patent.